Hey, Lily, I'm wondering if you've come across this site called Let's Settle This on Neil.fun this week. It's supposed to help us all settle the big furious internet debates, like, if it's pronounced GIF or JIF.
Oh, please don't give anyone ideas that GIF might even be a thing. We all know it's a GIF.
We should know that, I agree, but I'm assuming you also know the story about the guy who invented the Moog synthesizer, yeah? He went to a conference once and got up on stage and introduced himself and said, "Hi, I'm Robert Moog, creator of the Moog synthesizer." So this stuff can get all screwed
I literally have no idea what you're talking about. But anyway,
up.
what does this have to do with the episode, Randy?
There actually was a point. I've always wondered about how a product person, who always works with a team, can also really be an individual contributor. And that's exactly one of the reasons, well, that and a couple of other smart things he talks about, is why we got Jason Knight to join us to chat about that and the move from individual contributor up to product leader.
Yes, and you might know Jason from his own podcast, One Night in Product, or from the great talk he gave on this very topic.
And Jason's definitely got a great voice for podcasting. So let's get straight to settling this debate.
The product experience is brought to you by Mind the Product.
Every week, we talk to the best product people from around the globe about how we can improve our practice and build products that people love.
Visit mindtheproduct.com to catch up on past episodes and to discover an extensive library of great content and videos.
Browse for free or become a Mind the Product member to unlock premium articles, unseen videos, AMAs, roundtables, discounts to our conferences around the world, training opportunities, and more.
Mind the Product also offers free Product Tank meetups in more than 200 cities, and there's probably one near you.
Jason, thank you so much for coming on our podcast instead of your own for a change.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I think it's nice to come and see how the other half live from time to time, right? It's important to come to the vaulted cathedrals of power.
Sure. We'll go with that. So for anyone who doesn't know you or your voice already, can you give us a little intro? Tell us, how did you get into product? Tell us about your podcast and what are you doing for a day job these days?
Oh, so many questions, so little time. Where shall I start? So how did I get into product? That's actually a really interesting kind of messy story, as I guess many people's journeys into product have been. I think it's been a bit of a process over a number of years. I've kind of been working in tech and building tech solutions and tech products and kind of in that space for probably about 20 years. And there's been a really, really slow segue from developing the solutions into starting to kind of plan out the solutions and work with the stakeholders and start doing some of that product thing. So I've actually only had product in my job title for about 3 years. But before that, it was kind of, as I've heard from a number of people, they kind of realize they're doing product anyway, just across the rest of their career and building so many of those muscles. So it's felt like a really natural kind of journey. But at the same time, it wasn't really a very linear one. I didn't go to like product university and just come out of a nice diploma and then that was me. It's like it's been kind of bouncing around loads of different things and then kind of finding my tribe and finding the position that really suits me the best. When it comes to my current day job, I'm working for a company called Udil. So we're a London-based regtech company. We provide APIs and web apps and integrations to help banks and financial service providers acquire, onboard, retain their business customers. So lots of data in there, lots of extraction of intelligence out of the data, and then providing that to big enterprises and smaller players and fintechs. So it's a pretty exciting space, very disruptive, and kind of replacing a lot of manual effort, which is something that I personally am really keen on, like that whole automation and making things efficient and making people's lives better so they don't have to do all these manual, horrible tasks and chase down documents manually. Podcast-wise, yeah, got my own podcast. It's obviously massively inspired by your work. One Night in Product, it's been going for about 18 months now. Talk to a bunch of product people. So if people ever run out of episodes of yours, I'm happy to invite them over to mine to have a listen and see if they like the sound of my voice instead.
And guys, you should check it out. It's fantastic.
I'll do my best.
So we were going to chat with you this evening about individual contributors and also getting into product leadership, and how to make that move and kind of what that move means as well. But tell me, what was it that inspired you to write about this in the first instance?
Well, you know, content is king and all that, right? So you've got to reuse and repurpose your content. And one of the things that actually spurred this off, I did a talk at Product Elevation, which is the Dublin conference that was at the back end of last year. And, you know, I'll be completely open and honest. Like, they said, what things can you talk about? And I gave them a list of things I could talk about. I wasn't like super passionate about deliberately talking about that thing, but it is an area that I'm really interested in. So then I did that talk. It went okay. And I then decided to start repurposing some of that stuff because, you know, not everyone went to that. And at the same time, I think it's actually a topic that really deserves discussion, because I think it's fair to say that there's a large number of people that are kind of just, for want of a better word, and let's just, you know, say it to insult people, blundering into product leadership because that's like the next step in their path. Like, they're not getting a lot of support or training or coaching, and in many ways they're not really set up for success. And I just think it's really important for people to realize some of the things that that actually involves and how they might actually increase their odds a little bit.
Okay, can we talk a little bit about what an individual contributor in product actually is? Because it's not like we actually do anything ourselves. That's not fair. We do a bunch of things, but we're not responsible for doing things. There's nothing we can do without other people most of the time. So what does it actually mean to be an IC in product?
Well, yeah, I think that's a fair kind of opening statement, but I'd argue that actually as product people, we do have individual contribution roles that, and outputs that we can actually, you know, put out there. You know, we've got the output of our research. We've got the outputs of the planning and the initiatives and the user stories, if we're using user stories, and all of the different artifacts that are the result of the good product work that we do. And I'd say that whilst it's true that individual contributors on the product side are very much, they're kind of propped up by the rest of the teams that are actually doing the execution for the most part. I mean, I know that some people end up kind of doing a bit of QA or a bit of development or UX themselves as well. But ultimately, if they're in a really good, well-functioning team, then yes, they are very much reliant on the talent of the wider team. And there's this whole idea of kind of managing by influence and not authority and being cross-functional and empowering the team and collaborating. And these are all great things to do. I think that the difference between being an individual contributor and being a product leader is really the breadth of the role. As in, if I'm an individual contributor, I'm assuming in a small company, I'm working on maybe the whole product, fine. If I'm working in a bigger company, I'm working maybe on a bit of the product or one of the lines of the product. And if I'm in somewhere like Google or Facebook, I'm working on like the search button or something like that, because it's that granular and it needs that much attention and it's got that much importance behind it. And I think that where I put the product leader away from that is that but where I put the product leader away from that is not so much that they're just like a more senior product manager. They're the person that's sitting there trying to enable those teams, as many as there are, to actually succeed and, you know, set the stage for their success.
So it means you don't actually, as a product leader, you might not actually be doing any product work. So why would you want to move away from being an IC?
So I think that there's at least two reasons to want to move away from being an individual contributor to being a leader in any particular role. But let's continue to talk just about product managers. I think the first reason is like there's a certain type of person, there's a certain type of career ambition around having prestige, power, keys to the executive washroom, being able to boss people around and crack the whip. And I'm pretty sure that we've all worked for people like that in our careers. Like, that is not an unknown dynamic. And I think it's fair to say that working for someone like that is not necessarily going to be the most fun. But most people that have worked in any type of company have probably encountered people either directly managing them or managing teams that are side and they've had to interact with them. I don't think you want to work for that type of person, but it is a type of person that exists. And then you've got the second type of person who's like, they've worked, say, for example, in product management. They've worked in product management for a bunch of years. They've shipped loads of product. They've done all the stuff. They've got all the skills. They've done their time. And now they're sitting there saying, hey, I've got all these skills, all this experience. I've got these ambitions to now take those skills and that experience and actually try and make sure that the next generation, like the people that are following me, that they're set up for success because, hey, when I was doing it, it was hard. I needed support when I was doing it. And therefore, when I go forward, I want to help other people have the best chance to kind of protect them from all the non-product thinking that there is out there, make sure that they're supported in doing all the product things that they want to do, and giving them the benefit of all my experience to try and help them succeed and have the best time possible while they're doing it as well. But I also should say that there's a third type of person that gets into this as well. And those are the people that probably didn't even really want to be leaders in the first place. They kind of felt that they had to because they're in a situation where maybe that's the next step of the career ladder. They didn't really see that there was any way to progress other than just keep doing what they're doing or going into leadership and kind of, again, not really wanting to do it. They'll take it, but it's not really where they're passionate. They don't really have any particular interest in coaching people. They just want to be more senior. And I think one of the good things that I've seen is this whole idea of having a senior individual contributor role where you can be like a principal product manager, or you can be working on these really big problems at a really senior level, but not having to do all that line management, which you thought would have had to have come with that.
Yeah, thanks. That's exactly where I was trying to draw that distinction.
And also, I think one of the reasons, you know, in that instance, behind kind of taking these more senior roles or the product leadership roles is because they pay the better salaries, which is often, you know...
Well, it's definitely a motivator, right?
Yeah, a major factor for a lot of people, but might not suit everyone. So like you say, having those kind of principal roles facilitates more earnings without the need to move into that product leadership sort of space.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But I'm curious as well, because we've kind of talked about it from the individual's point of view, but there's also a huge onus on the business's point of view to lay out different career paths for, you know, the individual contributor versus the product leader. And this does seem to be, like you say, moving on a lot from where we were 5-10 years ago. Do you think it's working, like in your experience, does that work? And also, is there really, I mean, I haven't myself kind of experienced those very senior individual contributor roles, so I'm curious to know how that really kind of works in practice and if it does solve the problem.
Yeah, to be fair, I've not seen that directly myself in organizations that I've worked with. It's very much been anecdotal and hearing feedback from other people. I have seen it personally with engineering types, for example. So for example, there are engineers that I know that I've worked with that, again, they're not really either interested or set up for that level of management and people development. It's not really their passion. It's not really their kind of wheelhouse. And for that, you know, they either get forced to do that in a very similar way to product people, or they kind of just linger around just doing bits and pieces and not having that path. So I think there's a big parallel there between engineering and product people. And I think that some of the people that I've seen that have been given that path have then gone on to really flourish and be really good senior engineers, helping us solve some of the biggest problems that we have in ways that their peers maybe can't because of, you know, their skill sets or the experience that they have, and unencumbered by that leadership burden, let's call it, the necessary overhead of them having to manage the individual careers of individual people within their teams and coming up with development plans and coming up with coaching plans. Like, not everyone's set up for that, and we should be completely okay with that. Like, everyone's got their own unique skills to bring to the party. That's in many ways the whole point of having cross-functional teams. And if we imagine some kind of notional cross-functional organization, like, everyone's got their part to play, but you shouldn't be forcing people to do things that they don't actually want to do. In a kind of slight tangent, like the same reason that you shouldn't force engineers to go to discovery if they don't want to. You certainly want some engineers to go to discovery, but some people aren't going to be into that. And you should embrace that as much as possible, as long as you do have some people that do that. So again, it's about having that balance of people and making sure that you use people's talents in the most effective way.
Okay, so I've made it. I've blundered or not blundered, hopefully, into a role where I'm the most senior product person, whether it's in my company, in my division, you know, I am by anyone's definition a leader in product in my sphere of influence. What do I need to know? You know, how is my job going to be different than when I was an individual contributor or maybe even a product manager who had some line management responsibility, but not necessarily one of the top seats.
Yeah. So one of the things I've tried to describe as it's like being a product leader isn't just like being a product manager, but a bit more leadery. Like there's other responsibilities that you probably didn't have when you were more of an individual contributor. Like, again, you say there could be senior PMs that maybe had some line management responsibility. And obviously these senior PMs or even non-senior PMs are working cross-functionally and leading with influence throughout their teams all the time. So I think it's a fair point to say that there's some level of leadership in all product managers to some degree. I think when you get to this whole top level product leadership position, you're really there to be the advocate for product and even the existence of product within the company, and to defend product as a practice, to be that kind of exec whisperer that can sit between product and the executive team and make sure that the executive team understand the benefit and the reasons and the justifications for the things that you're doing. And if you're working in a bigger company that has a bunch of product lines or different teams, then you're kind of responsible for all of those things. And you said earlier, like, are these people doing actual product management? It's like, well, kind of not. Like, they need to be grounded in product management. They need to understand product management. They need to understand how product managers work. They need to understand how products are built. But I think so much of their role becomes softer even than product managers. Like, they're having to work on cross-functional, cross-team, upwards and downwards communication. They're having to work on coaching. So they're having to work on coaching. They have to work on ideal team and organizational setup to make sure that the company's able to succeed in whatever initiatives that it's got on its plate. They've obviously got to hire. They've got to fire. They've got to inspire. It's like all these different things that they have to do that, whilst they're doing a bit of at that individual contributor level, it's just wider. And I guess I'd classify it almost as like a zoom level where you're kind of zooming out so that you can see more of the picture and you're responsible for more of the picture.
And those different areas that you just mentioned there around kind of communication, coaching, team structure, hiring, firing, inspiration, and I know you mentioned strategy as well.
Yeah.
They're actually, like you say, they're all things that are very different from what you're doing in a day-to-day product manager role. Well, not very different, but potentially quite different. So how do you then, like, what's your kind of experience of gaining experience or like gaining the skills that you need in each of these different areas? And I think, you know, they're all very different.
So yeah, I think that you're right. That's a very wide portfolio of skills. And as per the earlier point, there's like this unspoken truth that many leaders just end up in leadership with very little support or coaching. And I was actually speaking to a guy on my podcast a few weeks back around leadership and this idea that people don't really like to introspect themselves as much as possible. Like, people don't want to look at themselves and start to identify their own weaknesses and see what they're not very good at. And they kind of just try and get on with it to some extent. And I think that this concept that I've come up with is this idea that, for example, if I get a job, my first job as a leader, product or otherwise, and I don't have that coaching and I don't have that training and that support, all I have to do is look at maybe my boss and what they're doing, or bosses that I've had in the past and what they've done. And there's this also uncomfortable truth that they're probably blundering along themselves because they probably didn't get any support themselves when they were coming into leadership. So they kind of worked it out from their bosses who similarly didn't have any support. And so, like, you've just got this entire chain of people who are learning from people that never really learned how to do this stuff. So for me, it's all about, I mean, there's a few things you can do, obviously. I mean, I'm a big reader. I like to read. I like to read books about this stuff. I'm very boring. Therefore, I can use that to help to challenge my own thinking. Obviously, things like with you, you two and the podcast and me and my podcast, you know, we get to talk to a bunch of people about this stuff all the time. And that helps to challenge my thinking. Going to talks and going to seminars and watching webinars, that helps to challenge our thinking as well. But more than all of this, I think there's just an absolute requirement for there to be some investment in coaching by the people that are promoting these people into that position, and some investment in them, either leadership coaching, you know, just leadership coaching of any sort would still be more beneficial than none. Obviously, product leadership would be an even better course to put them on. But any kind of leadership to kind of give them some of the inspiration that they need to become the coaches and the organizers and the hirers and the firers and the strategic people that they need to be, I think it's absolutely critical to get that coaching and that teaching in early, because otherwise people just lapse into bad habits.
So Jason, I just need to give you a piece of advice, you know, because we're the podcasting veterans and all.
Yes.
And I know you were just being self-deprecating, but if you want people to listen to your podcast, don't tell them how boring you are in the middle of an interview.
Oh no, I'm only boring when I read books. I am fascinating when I'm talking on my podcast. Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, much better. Thank you. So going back to the skills you're talking about, these are things that we've probably done a piece of in the past. We've, you know, had to do it at the individual team level. But when I'm an individual contributor, I have North Stars, I have OKRs, I have KPIs that I can measure. It tells me if I'm doing my job well. If my job is around communication and inspiration and strategy, how do I measure these? How do I grade myself on these things?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously very difficult to measure inspiration. It's something that I'm sure people have tried. I'm sure there's some framework somewhere where people can try to measure how inspiring they are. And yeah, if there's not, then I'm going to try and write a book about that so we can start to create. We can all take some finder's fees on that one. I think in many ways, as with product as a whole, like the biggest overall success is the success of the product in however that's measured. So for example, rewind slightly, it's not even just that. It's obviously the growth of the company. It's the performance of the company and the revenue that that product drives and the number of users and the satisfaction with that product and the scale that that drives. Like, these are all the ultimate goals of any company, right? Unless it's a charity or a company that wants to go bankrupt. Like, everyone wants to grow and get better and do good things off of the back of that product. So I know it sounds kind of woolly, but things like, have I got a good strategy? Well, okay, how is the product performing? If you can come up with some kind of overall KPI for the overall, like a North Star, basically, like everyone's got their North Stars or their Southern Crosses if they're down south, and they're all sitting there trying to optimize for that in whatever bit of the product that they're responsible for. But what's the North Star or the Southern Cross for the entire product? What's the overall KPI? What's overall success look like? Is it just revenue for the company? Or is there something a bit more product focused that you can focus on? And if you can identify that, then you can try and hopefully use all of your supporting efforts to drive that metric up. But yeah, inspiration, it's tricky, right? I guess ultimately there are things like staff surveys and things like that you can do to try and work out how people feel about you. But yeah, that's not always going to be 100% accurate, because people might be scared because you're a terrifying leader. So these are things that you have to bear in mind as well.
That's actually something I'm curious about, because that terrifying leader, that autocrat type person, they can be incredibly successful.
Oh, yes.
And we've seen it time and time again. Probably usually, you know, they'll drive other people out of the business and things like that. But the overall business success, at least in the short term, can be tremendous.
Yeah.
So is that the right way of measuring it? Is it the success? Is that enough to just say it's the success of the business and the product?
Well, I mean, I think success of the business and the product is obviously an important metric, but you've got to understand how you get there as well, right? So there have to be ways to measure people's satisfaction with that leader. If everyone's terrified or hates that leader, there's going to be ways to find that out, even if that person is a dictator and makes it very hard to, you know, like they punish people for saying bad things about them. There are ways to find that out if you've got a sensitive overall leadership, if people talk to each other and communicate to each other within the company. And if you don't have those things, then actually that in itself represents something about the company that you're going to need to fix anyway. Like, you need to be able to have those open communications. Now, is it fair to say that there are some leaders all the way up to CEO level that probably wouldn't give a monkeys if that was the case, as long as those results were coming in? 100%. There are people out there that will accept that kind of behavior because, oh, by God, they get results. And it's like, well, brilliant. They will get results, but then, like you say, everyone will end up leaving and they'll end up with a team totally different, or maybe no team at all, having to offshore everything because they can't get people to come in. The glass door goes through the floor. Like, there's going to be repercussions of that. But at the same time, I think it is fair to say that that's going to take a bit of time and it might not save the people that are working there at the beginning of that process.
And just thinking back as well, into the kind of the initial like core of the topic, which is moving from IC into product leadership. As an individual contributor, or, you know, just general product manager, you know, is there a moment in time when you feel or know that you're ready to move into that product leadership role? Because I know a few people who are just like, I just need to like learn this and then I can apply for more senior roles, or I just need to do this and then I can do it. And I feel like they actually are already very capable of doing the role. They just haven't done it yet. So it's kind of holding them back. So is there, you know, at that stage of making, you know, applying for that initial promotion, or kind of pushing for that initial promotion, or applying for that senior position, like that they should be thinking about or considering?
Well, I think imposter syndrome is rife throughout product management, right? So lots of people are going to sit there and judge themselves and think that they're not any good, or that they're not good enough, or that they can't make that step. And then you've got this kind of chasm, you know, if we go back to crossing a chasm type imagery, like there's a gap probably to jump between thinking that you're a decent PM and thinking that you're a good product leader, because there is a jump and there are a bunch of things that you're going to have to be good at that you might not have been as good at before, or as consistently good across all of them as you will probably need to be an effective leader. I think there's a couple of ways to look at it, right? So on the one hand, you could look at people and say, look, this person, maybe they're a senior PM and they've already got a couple of reports, or maybe they're just punching way above their weight because they're already doing some leadership type stuff and they're demonstrating those skills on a daily basis. They maybe just don't see it. I think that's the job of the leadership of that company, or the leadership of the product organization, depending on the size of both of those things, to identify that and nurture it and coach that and coach those people up. I think the alternative way to look at it is when you look at a product leadership position, like a job spec. Now, we have to own up to the fact that many of those job specs are going to be completely trash, like dumpster fire job specs, because many, many, many product jobs of all descriptions have dumpster fire job specs. But if you look at that job specification, does it excite you? Like, does doing those things, whether you think that you're any good at them or not yet, does the fundamental concept of doing those things resonate with you, or does it fill you with absolute horror? Because if it fills you with horror, you probably shouldn't even go anywhere near it. If you're just not sure if you'd be quite good enough at it yet, but you really want to do it, I think you should push yourself in that direction, to be honest.
So here's one other thing on that, Jason. When we manage a product team, you know, we're not expecting ourselves to do everything in terms of all the development, all the QA, all the design, et cetera.
Yeah.
So when you are in that leadership position, should you make sure that you are doing all of those things around communication, coaching, strategy, everything else? Or is it something that you need to make sure it's covered, that other people can take parts of it, some or all of it?
I think we want to empower our teams. That's a cliche, obviously. It's from all of the different good books about product, so it's not a controversial thing to say that we should empower our teams, but I think we should empower our teams. We need to give our teams areas of control or areas of responsibility, and they should have as much possibility to affect change and hit the goals and hit the targets that those particular areas have. Absolutely. I don't think there's any controversy over wanting to, or there shouldn't be any controversy. I know there probably is in some companies, but there shouldn't be any controversy over trying to bring these people up and making sure that they can contribute as much as they can. I think from a leadership perspective, you absolutely need to understand that it's your job to make sure that these things get done in some way, shape, or form. So if the company is having problems communicate, or rather, if the product team is having communication problems, or if there are problems with the people within the teams that they're not able to perform for whatever reason, like they're missing some skills, or they're missing some context, or any of the things that can impact on their jobs, or if the teams aren't set up right, if you've not got enough PMs, or if the PMs aren't performing and they need to be potentially moved on, if you don't have a strategy, if the team don't know what they're coming to work for and why they should be even excited about their product, it is definitely your responsibility to make sure all of those things happen. But I 100% think that it's the responsibility of everyone. But I definitely think it's 100% the responsibility of everyone within those teams to contribute to that mission. And you're there then to help draw that out of them and support them when they have trouble doing that.
And I think there's one other interesting thing that I'm just going to circle back to. Like you mentioned earlier, a lot of us, you know, we don't get taught this stuff, but we have the product leaders that we work for as examples of how to do it. But in many cases, it may also be examples of how not to do it.
yes, that does happen.
And I just want to give those people who are in that situation some hope in that actually, if you are working in that situation, it is still really valuable to learn how not to do something and to be able to see how things aren't, you know, don't work for people and identify how you would do it differently if you were in that leadership role.
You know, before you answer that one, Jason, I'm just going to give a shout out to a former guest of ours, Claire Glue, who had the great line of make sure you're not somebody else's worst boss, because you will definitely, we all know what that looks like. And keeping that in mind is a really good thing.
Yeah, well, I'm going to quote someone you may have heard of, Emily Tate, who said on my podcast that even if you've worked for a really bad company, or if you've worked in a really suboptimal way, or if you've worked with bad people, I mean, I'm probably paraphrasing, but the basic point is if you've worked somewhere that's not ideal, the most important thing when you move to, say, your next job is to understand all of the things that went wrong with that and how you would have done things differently had you had the chance. Now, apologies to Emily if I've misquoted that, but that's the basic thrust of that argument. And I think it's completely valid. Like, I've worked in the past for less than ideal product organizations or product teams because of whatever reasons. And there are always reasons. And to be honest, I'm not even going to blame some of the people that were responsible for that, because everyone, I genuinely believe everyone's trying to do their best job. It's just not everyone's necessarily set up for it. We shouldn't kind of transmit our own disappointment with them onto their motives. Like, they're trying. It's just they don't know how to do things the way that maybe they should have done them. And that's completely fair enough. We've all been in that situation ourselves. So I think back to the point, or back to the question, yes, it's 100% valid to sit there and learn what you can about how products are made, even if they're not made in the best way. Like, there's still valuable lessons to learn, and you can take something from what you're doing. There's always something that you can get, even in a suboptimal organization, right? Like, maybe they're not very good at doing the strategy stuff, or maybe they're a bit micromanagey, but you can work out how to run sprints, and you didn't do that before, and now you know how to run sprints or some version of sprints. Or, you know, maybe they're really good at research, but they've got a very low performing engineering team because of reasons. And that's something that so you're struggling to get work out and actually delivering features, but you're really getting to grips with the user research and some of the other stuff. Like, there's always something that you can learn, but you do have to really own up to what you're learning wrongly based on our definition of what's wrong and right, and then try to use that to your advantage. As per Emily's point, like, you go forward and you say, okay, now in my next job, I want to do it differently. I don't want to work for a company like that anymore. I want to go and work for a company that where I can use my experience to identify some of the maybe bad smells that kind of company has, and work for a different company, do things in a different way, and then kind of continue that learning journey, hopefully with a better outcome.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I think that was an excellent last point. And
well, it was mainly Emily's, so you can take mine the product for that one, I guess.
Well, it was very well, I was going to say regurgitated, but that's not a great word, is it?
Yeah, it makes me sound like a mummy bird.
Yeah. None of us are all that original. We don't get points for originality. We get points for knowing when to use the smart stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Well, I've got
say.
A bank of quotes in my back pocket, 104 episodes long, so I'm happy to use them whenever needed.
Jason, thanks very much.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So after we had that fantastic chat with Jason, we then stopped recording and went on to have another fantastic chat about who the best Batman is. So I think we're going to have to set up another Let's Settle This debate thing on neil.fun about who the best Batman is. But who would it be between, Randy? Because you can only have two options.
Let's see. It can't be George Clooney. It might be Adam West and Michael Keaton.
Oh, see, I would have gone Michael Keaton or Lego Batman.
Yeah, well, we did kind of agree on who the best Batman and second best Batman were, and it was the two of them. But Jokers, we had a bigger debate on, but that's for another episode.
And as usual, if you are enjoying all of our shenanigans over here on The Product Experience, please like us, follow us, subscribe, and let us know. Chat to us on Twitter or whatever. We love getting feedback from you.
And if you have opinions on best Batman, best Jokers, best Catwoman, best any of that, please do let us know, because we definitely have opinions on the topic.
Take care and see you next time.
See you next time.
Our hosts are me, Lily Smith, and...
me, Randy Silver.
Emily Tate is our producer, and Luke Smith is our editor.
Our theme music is from Hamburg-based band POW, that's P-A-U. Thanks to Arne Kittler, who runs Product Tank and MTP Engage in Hamburg, and plays bass in the band, for letting us use their music. Connect with your local product community via Product Tank, our regular free meetups in over 200 cities worldwide.
If there's not one near you, you can consider starting one yourself. To find out more, go to mindtheproduct.com/producttank.
Product Tank is a global community of meetups driven by and for product people. We offer expert talks, group discussion, and a safe environment for product people to come together and share learnings and tips.